misunderstanding. In the story, when you're talking about him being on the running board and all that, what was it that he would do in the?
He would have his gun and he would lay in wait for the Ku Klux Klan to come after his Negroes.
Oh, so he was basically there to keep them from hanging onto his property. I see.
And he got beat up, I don't know how many times, by them. Yeah, because they just come in droves. And I remember back when I was so small that I was on his shoulder, and the only time the Ku Klux Klan ever had a march parade around our town, and one of my father's best friends made the mistake of speaking to my father, and it just broke my father's heart, because, you know, they have the sheets over their head, and back in those days, no one knew who belonged. They never removed the hoods from their faces. And I remember the next morning at breakfast, my father telling us children that anything you do in life, you don't cover your head to do it. That was a no-no. So, and my father was in the Masonic Lodge, and he joined the Shriners when they were building the Shriner Hospital in Dallas. And we were real proud because he got to ride the camel in the parade. And I think he joined the Shriners and was up to 32nd degree when he was 28 years old. Because he gave me my Shriner pin when I was 2 that I still wear. And he told me to always wear it and I'd never be in trouble. And it has stood me instead in traveling of assistance without obligations. It's a protection for one's family, more in Texas, I think, than it is out here for one Masonic member will look after another Masonic's family in case of need or no handouts, and you can't ask them for help, but it's a fantastic thing, and my father enjoyed it tremendously.
I was just wondering, did you ever do things with him out on the farm? From the things you tell me, it sounds like you were pretty close.
Very close. Yeah. He was not an affectionate man. I can remember back, he would get a comforter out of my cedar chest and run jumping the bed. And I'd go wrestling for it to get it back. And, I was only 89 pounds when I was 15 years old. So I was just a little teeny tiny nothing when I was growing up. And I'd sit on his lap, and I remember one time he got his head all banged up from the Ku Klux Klan. I sat on his knee and was petting his head, you know, and he pinched me on the hiney and says, "Oh, go play." The closest he ever wanted me to him was when he got sick. He had terrible headaches when he first got pneumonia, and he wanted me right in the room with him at all times. And he didn't think his mother and father knew that he smoked, which is obvious, you know, you can smell it. So I would run get his pipe tobacco, they rolled their own in those days. And when my grandparents would leave or take it away if they were coming. And he just seemed to want me in the room for him. So I have a feeling that he had a premonition that it was coming. I don't know, but that's the only inclination that I had.
Were you as close to your mother?
No, never. My mother was quite, how can I put it politely? Resented children. She never wanted any children. And a daughter in particular. She was always, till the day she died, jealous of me having anything or accomplishing anything. She couldn't have any joy in it. My oldest brother was her pet. And he could do no wrong, and my other brother and I could do no right. And he has the principles of an alley cat. So, you know, they say the mother leans to the least of the litter. So I don't know. I didn't understand my mother's rejection, which you never, ever get used to, until, oh God, I guess 2 years before she died. I was darn near 60 years old. Mm-hmm. And she told me about when her brother was born, when she was three. Mm-hmm. Her father turned to the boy, and it was jealousy from 3 years old now had ruined her entire life from learning to love other people and let other people love. Mm-hmm. Her idea was you love her and no one else. Mm-hmm. I wasn't supposed to even like anybody else. Mm-hmm. She broke up every girlfriend I ever had and almost every fella. I came out here really to get rid of her. She's just not a person that you could be around.
Yeah. How did you, after this, her second husband died, mm-hmm. Did all your support come from the things that you did mm-hmm. working with him?
Mm-hmm. The stepfather left us a house in town, which was paid for in those days, and some money. How much, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Mother never shared, only burdens. She never shared any of the good things. Mm-hmm. But I know when I was 15, she had a carbuncle and almost died. I took care of her. Well, I took care of the carbuncle every hour on the hour for 7 days, and then I passed out. And we had to call in a nurse. And in 3 days, she had blood poisoning, and she spent 3 months in the hospital and almost died. Mm-hmm. And the money that was spent while she was in the hospital finished off what my stepfather had left her. Mm-hmm. So she had, in a small town, it takes dollars to live a month, not hundreds, mm-hmm. even in those days.
Mm-hmm. So you managed to get by with just what you've mm-hmm. been with. Quilting and mm-hmm. you're saying hanging paper in the houses mm-hmm. and just other mm-hmm. was that something that I knowing that she was a widow, did people connect with you
mm-hmm.
and her differently?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, anytime there was something that needed to be done, it was not talked about in the missionary society or whatever. But in those days, you did what you could. Everybody did what they could do because there wasn't any or very many handy men like the handyman type. More women did that sort of thing. Hmm. And there was no uncles around. One uncle lived in Dallas and he was a CPA, worked for Nabisco. Mm-hmm. The other was a school teacher and then, excuse me, the other uncle lived on a farm, so there was no handyman around. But by living on a farm, we all became handy at doing whatever was necessary, and the boys would come in and do. Mm-hmm. But in the town, like we think of here, is there's always handymen around or men you can hire. But in those days, there wasn't. So mm-hmm. I always crawled up on the board and papered the ceiling because I was the child. And in those days, nothing mattered. You were a child, you'd outgrow it. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's a kid or she's a kid, it won't matter, you know. I was petrified to be up on that board trying to paper a 14-foot-high ceiling, uh-huh. you know.
Uh-huh. Well, did you work with many tools and things then growing up?
Mm-hmm. My father had a blacksmith hobby type shop. He had a bandsaw, and I remember his God, as far back as I can remember, just putting anything in that darn saw to go through. It's a wonder we had any arms or legs or anything else. Tools.
I can just picture that.
So you become very handy at if a toaster needs fixing or anything else that you happen to have needs fixing, mm-hmm. you just figure out some way to fix it or you take it to a repair shop mm-hmm. and say, well, I don't have very much money. Can you tell me how to fix this, or do I need this, or do I need that? And they would help a kid in those days, you know, because the man that run the repair shop mm-hmm. had kids, and he was just making out, and he would just felt fortunate to be making a living, you know. Mm-hmm. So it you have to come to a big city to meet dog-eat-dog. Mm-hmm. because nobody goes hungry in a small town, and nobody needs for a neighbor's assistance mm-hmm. or anything like that. They just help one another, because that's how they all have survived all those years, is they've been helped, so they know to pass it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you had mentioned before we started the tape about mm-hmm. being sick as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, you said you had polio. How old were you on that?
Do you want me to start at the beginning?
Sure, start at the beginning.
I had diphtheria when I was 4 and almost died. And then when I was 6, I had, they called it dead liver then. It would be hepatitis today, and I almost died then. And then when I was 7, I had malaria. And I had that every year, reoccurring, for 17 years. And then when I was 10, I had polio. And as such, they didn't know it was polio in those days. It only left me weak in the left side and infantile, mm-hmm. female organ-wise. Mm-hmm. And then I had my appendix out when I was 16. And from then on, it was female trouble mm-hmm. until I was 40 mm-hmm. when I had a hysterectomy, after I'd had the one child.
So, but during those growing up years then, did you end up spending a lot of time, say, out of school or...
An awful lot of time out of school.
Or mm-hmm. bedridden from these kind of things?
No, you learn to function pretty well on malaria when a good case would hit you at the start of the spring when the mosquitoes would come out.
Mm-hmm.
You would have 105 fever one day and chills the next. And that would run rampant then until you'd take quinine to get you over it or get it under control. Mm-hmm. And then you'd have it intermittent all summer.
Mm-hmm.
But in the winter, you'd fare pretty well. Mm-hmm. And I had pneumonia a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Other than that, healthy as a horse.
were the other kids in the family, well, of course you're saying that they mm-hmm. they left, but even when you were younger, were they coming down with the same mm-hmm. kinds of things?
Yeah.
You just got hit harder than anybody else.
Yep. Well, I attribute part of it to, in those days, my oldest brother was in school. So whatever he would catch, he would bring home, and Mother would put George and I in with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really got over one thing until she would hit me with something else, you know, measles and chicken pox. And I never had the mumps. It was the only thing I guess I never had.
Mm-hmm.
And... they never could ever trace where I got the diphtheria. There was none within 100 miles.
Hmm.
But my father figures that he bought a wing of the parish sanitarium, which was the hospital in those days. It was called a sanitarium, but sanitariums have a different connotation today.
Mm-hmm.
With my mother and myself. Mm-hmm. One of us was in the hospital a couple of times a year.
Hmm.
So... other than that, just colds and things, mm-hmm. nothing to amount to anything.
So she had also had health problems besides
the kidney.
The kidney.
Mm-hmm. In 1944, she finally had one kidney removed.
Mm-hmm.
But once you lose one kidney, every time she'd get the flu or anything, she'd have to go back to the hospital in her later years.
Mm-hmm.
But... she did all right.
Yeah.
For the shape we're in.
So the polio didn't affect your, you're saying outside of female organ.
Nothing.
Or whatever.
Weak left side.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if growing up, did your mother talk to you at all about menstruation before you started your first period?
Yes and no. My mother was the type of person that, in the country, in her day, when you got married, you bought a medical book
mm-hmm.
that gave you, God, it was a book like this, gave you everything.
It was about 4 inches high.
Yeah, and about yay big.
Mm-hmm.
And I was given that. And then turned right around and told everything was a sin, everything was wrong. So it kind of had that kind of effect on me, which had a lot to do with my marriage failing, the first one, which I wasn't prepared. And I started, I thought, with the menstrual cramps when I was 12, but I was past 15 before I ever really started.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had problems from then on, and they really compounded after I got married.
Mm-hmm. So by having you read the medical book, then you were supposed to understand what your period was and how all that.
Yeah. And I saw what she did, you know, things. Mm-hmm. So I was aware of that. We were not, well, I guess you would call our whole family kind of nudist at heart. There was no, I knew what little boys looked like, and little boys knew what I looked like.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there was no big deal that way.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow or another, as far as my mother was concerned, sex and, for me, that is, not her, me, sex was dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's confusing to a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't prepared for marriage at all, and my wedding night was quite a shock to my husband and I.
Mm-hmm.
And that scared us both to death. He had not had a virgin before, and I never knew what happened being a virgin.
Uh-huh.
So then, I guess I was married about 10 months when cramps really started and my female trouble really got underway.
Mm-hmm.
And,
had she talked to you at all about birth control or anything? Well, you said she didn't even talk to you about sex.
Uh-uh.
Periods.
No.
Yeah. Did your mother date people at all while she was, after her second husband died? Or?
There was not many available men.
Mm-hmm.
No. Not while I was home, anyway.
Mm-hmm. So did you didn't get much of a chance, say, in high schools or whatever, to, she wasn't dating or doing anything like that herself?
No.
Uh-huh. So
she was mainly in with my group.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very embarrassing. You know, I don't know if you went through it or not, but you know, you go through an age when you're, say 13 to about 16, where parents aren't very smart and they don't know very much, and, you know. Well, my mother would try to be the center of attention, and I could tell the kids were making fun of her.
Mm-hmm.
And that just drew me more into an introvert and embarrassed and unsure of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't come out of that until I went to work.
Mm-hmm.
My mother-in-law, first mother-in-law, was one of the greatest women that ever lived on the face of the earth. She was a true mother, and she was 15 when she had her first child, learned to read and write with her first two children. And when I was the first daughter-in-law in that family of six boys and a girl, and she'd raised a nephew. So her husband was a railroad section foreman, and she had just lived under the most, well, poverty would put it lightly. He made $125 a month, and they gave him a house, which was four bare walls, four rooms, you know, nothing in them. She never had running water. She never had an indoor bathroom. But she took me to her heart like, well, she couldn't stand my mother because my mother wasn't good enough to me.
Mm-hmm.
But three winters, we had to live with them. And I never will forget, if I live to be a million, the first time, you know, you're just crushed when your husband can't make a living and you're in debt and no place to go. So we went out and talked to them and, well, come on home and live with us. Well, we slept in with the room with four brothers. And she says, now, this home is as much yours as mine. I will neither tell you to do anything or require you to do anything. You just do what you feel like or don't do whatever you feel like. She said, I had a bitch for a mother-in-law. And she says, I spanked my kids a many a time when they didn't need it and didn't when they did need it because she was always butting in. And well, she and I were just buddies.
Mm-hmm.
She had a 3-year-old son, and I looked after him, and when she'd want to go out with her husband dancing, or alone and dancing. And she and I would walk into town, which was 2 miles, to go to the show. If my husband wouldn't go with me, she'd say, "You put on your clothes, we'll go." And she cried like a baby when we came out here, and especially when I went home to tell her I was leaving my husband. Mm-hmm. First thing she says, "What's he done to you?" And I said, "Nothing." I wouldn't tell her, mm-hmm. because she'd always said that I'd never put up with what she had, chasing and, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And till this day, I love her like she's my own mother. Mm-hmm. And my present husband's mother was the other kind. Can't have everything.
When you were growing up in school, mm-hmm. were there any subjects that were your favorites?
Home ec.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I loved math. I wasn't all that good in math, but I loved math. Never quite got the hang of history or English.
Mm-hmm.
But home ec was my first love. I'm a frustrated designer.
Did you ever have ideas about what you would do when you got older as a child? And did you ever think about being or working at anything?
I wanted to get married and have 6 children.
Uh-huh.
I had dolls and I wanted babies.
Uh-huh.
And at the time I was growing up, there was 3 professions for women: nurses, school teachers, or restaurant, mm-hmm. waitress. And that was just about the extent of it,
mm-hmm.
as far as training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, college, a nurse. And until my mother got the carbuncle, I wanted to be a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
But that cured that in a hurry. No more. But I've always wanted to, in fact, that's one of the main reasons I wanted to come to California. I wanted to work for a designer, but little did I know I didn't have any background for that until I got out of here. But I've gone on to, I'm a trained men's tailor, which I can no longer do. And in fact, I could more than teach college tailoring. Mm-hmm. I was asked to do that about 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So...
How was that when you learned later, or was that just
that's
from...
when I got out here,
mm-hmm.
after World War II.
Yeah. Now, you stayed with your mother even after, you left school, you're saying,
mm-hmm.
in 10th grade.
Yeah, I got married that June.
That June,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh. Did you, how did you meet your first husband?
Oh, he was the football captain in high school.
Oh.
I was a freshman, and he was a senior.
Uh-huh.
So in the interim of dating, he left and went into the Navy, and then, I didn't know it at the time, he received an unconditional, no, bad conduct discharge. That was for on leave without permission.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a dishonorable, but it's not an honorable, mm-hmm. discharge. So we got married that June. Oh, he must have got out in the winter time. And we had gone together and written and, you know, all of that for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we got married, and he went to work for the ice company, $50 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived in a bedroom and a closet, which made into a kitchen at my mother's for $7.50 a month. It was our first rent.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived there the first... year we were married. Then we moved to his folks in the winter time, and then the next spring we moved to an apartment down a block or two from our house where I was raised, mm-hmm. and lived there for a summer, and the next winter we went to stay at his folks, and then the next summer we rented a little house kitty-cornered across town,
mm-hmm.
and
1936.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And then 1939 we came out here.
Uh-huh.
And he worked as a filling station operator.
So before you had gotten married for some,
mm-hmm.
time, before you got married, the Depression,
mm-hmm.
and, did that affect your family at all?
Not us per se. We wouldn't have had any more money had there not been a Depression.
Uh-huh.
And we were not hungry. And small towns didn't feel the depression as much because, in 1929, one bank in our town folded, but the other one stayed. And luckily my father was in the one that stayed, and my grandfather was half and half.
Mm-hmm.
So we never went hungry,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people lost their farms, but they worked them anyway. So, mm-hmm. I mean, the Depression was an unknown factor to all of us. It wasn't felt that much.
Mm-hmm.
And we ate better than anybody in town because we had more, you know, canned on the half, so we got half of everything we canned.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always field crops and things to can.
Mm-hmm.
So we really, I think our market grocery bill would run, somewhere between $8 and $10 a month for the two of us, when my brother was living there working.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he bought me clothes. My grandparents would buy me clothes. And I'd get hand-me-downs from the neighborhood. And
mm-hmm.
those days, you were just glad to get anything.
Mm-hmm. So how old were you when you first got married?
19.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And so, in the 4 years between, those 3 or 4 years,
mm-hmm.
When you had stopped going to school,
mm-hmm.
Were you doing the work with your mother?
No, just housework. No, she was doing on her own then.
Uh-huh.
Because she only had herself then.
Mm-hmm.
And she took in boarders and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. What had made you decide to stop going to school?
Well, I saw no point in going on to high school
mm-hmm.
if I couldn't go on to college.
So when she turned down the offer
mm-hmm.
that your uncle
mm-hmm.
had made, it just didn't seem...
Well, what was the point of one more year, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I've regretted it since, but at that time, as many kids quit school as the ones that went to school.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to get married. But I also wanted to get out from under her control, too.
Yeah. So then you got married in 19, and it was about 3 years later that
mm-hmm.
you came?
3 and a half.
Out here.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. What made you decide to move to California?
Well, one of our neighbor fellows, the fellow that lived across the street from us, he and his wife had come out to Sunnyvale, California,
mm-hmm.
because there was nothing there. There's haves and have-nots in small towns. If you're the daughter of a banker, son of a banker, a department store, or dry goods store, whatever, you go come back and work in the store. But if you're not, you never get a job.
Mm-hmm.
So we were the have-nots. And I just could not see living with his folks every winter and out on our own because my husband wasn't trained for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have much ambition.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I've always had ambition to go up, you know. You've already seen what's in back of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't feel that much can lick you if you just try.
Mm-hmm.
So we came out here, and he never wanted me to work. I went to work one time in a liquor store, and it lasted a day and a half.
Mm-hmm.
A wino came in and stole a bottle of liquor, and the guy got so mad at me, he fired me.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him what to do if somebody took it, and he really says, well, nobody will ever steal anything. Well, he did that afternoon. So I quit, and then I worked another day in a dime store. And they didn't want to pay anything for that, so I quit. It was on Vermont Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And then the war came along. And, well, I spent most of my time before that because my husband would work from 10 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night at a filling station.
Mm-hmm.
So I would either walk from Vernon, Vermont, out to Gage in Vermont,
mm-hmm.
which is 4 or 5 miles. And at that time, you could walk out there at 10 o'clock at night and nobody would bother you.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. And I'd go to the theater. We made friends with kids in the neighborhood that he worked in the theater, so he'd let me go to the show. So I'd go to the show 3 nights, 4 nights a week every time it had changed
mm-hmm.
and see that. And then when the war broke out, that's when he told me that he'd had a bad conduct discharge and he wanted to get back in the service to clear his record. And the reason he stayed over leave, it sounds odd now, but I understand, I mean, it sounded odd then, but I understand it now.
Mm-hmm.
The last game of football he ever played, he was kicked in the nose and just crushed his nose. Well, in those days, you don't have money to take care of things, so the Navy didn't take care of it. And he had asthma. And he just couldn't tolerate the moisture on the beach and there. So he was staying over leave, trying to get them to take care of him. Well, instead of taking care of him medically, they just booted him out. So he...